The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Friday, everybody. Yes, it is Friday. We have made it almost to the weekend. Hope you're doing well on this Friday, April 19th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Sun is shining. It's another beautiful day on the plains. And man, I can't tell you how ready I am for the weekend. It's just been one of those weeks. Been a lot going on. Been really busy on the show, been busy outside the studio and life as well. I mean, it's just been one of those weeks, man, and ready for the weekend, but not before we have a fantastic show today. And look, this is Free For All Friday. You've been here before. You know what's going on. Free For All Friday edition of the show. No Uncle T-Bone today. He will be back on Monday. It's been a little more sporadic. He's had some things come up in outside the studio for him as well. So it's you and me and intern Alan's here with us as well. So we've got a great show on tap for you today. So many things to talk about. A little bit of Auburn football news in terms of the transfer portal, who Hugh Freeze and the Tigers are going after, kind of breaking down one of the position rooms in particular that I want to talk about today. Plus, I'm going to start getting into something we talked a little bit about yesterday when we were beginning to break down some schedules, and I want to continue doing that on the show today around the SEC because I think there's some really interesting ones. We didn't fully finish talking about Auburn's schedule. There's some really tough schedules around the SEC in college football this year. Some that are not all that bad, including Auburn. So a lot of that conversation today. Plus, we've got some rules changes in college football we need to go over. So all sorts of topics on the show today. And it is a free-for-all Friday, which means phone lines are open the entire 2 hours of the show. Yes, free-for-all Friday. You know how it is. I want to hear from you. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about today? We're taking any suggestions, any topics, anything is on your mind that you want to have a conversation about. Come on in and be a part of the show on today's show. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. And want to start with what I mentioned. Auburn football is getting into the transfer portal a little bit. I know we've talked about how the spring football portal has not really been all that crazy, hasn't really been overly exciting, hasn't been anything super crazy, but we knew that Auburn was going to go in and do something. We didn't quite know what, and we didn't really know where they were going to go in terms of positions that Auburn wanted to pick up in the portal, but as of right now, one of the big targets that Auburn, and they've been bringing in guys and had some visits on the D-line and on offense and things like that, but there's a big player in the football portal window that Auburn has reached out to, and it is a transfer wide receiver from Penn State by the name of Keandre Lambert-Smith. And most people are saying he is the top receiver in the transfer portal right now. And he's got tons of different schools that have reached out to him over the last few days, over the last week or so. A ton of schools have reached out. USC, Washington, Alabama, Texas A&M, Miami, Florida, Colorado, and of course, Auburn. His last year at Penn State made 53 catches for 673 yards and 4 touchdowns a year ago. Had 126 catches, 1,700 yards, and 11 touchdowns in 4 seasons at Penn State. He was a good player. He was never really their go-to. He was never their wide receiver one, but he was always an option for them. And look, somebody that caught almost 700 yards and 4 touchdowns a year ago. I mean, that pretty much fits in line with what Auburn's got and what Auburn had in these past couple of years. And of course, we've got the young guys coming in, and yeah, you do have some returning guys in the room. But a guy like Keandre Lambert-Smith, could elevate your room, your wide receiver room, instantly. Because let's look at what Auburn has right now. Let's look at what the receiver room stands at right now for this Auburn football team. You've got some guys coming back, sure. But the question that I pose is, how confident are you in the receivers that are returning? Well, there's been some that have left and probably more. But how confident are you, not in the new guys? I know we've got a lot of hype and expectations for the young bucks that are coming in, and we'll get to them in just a second. But the ones that are returning, the Coy Moores, the Camden Browns, right? The Jay Fairs of the world, Caleb Burtons. How do you feel about those guys coming back? I like them. I do. I like them a lot. And I think Caleb Burton is really, really interesting because he's somebody that came from Ohio State, and we've had the conversation about what it means to play wide receiver in Columbus there to be a Buckeye and what the potential is for him. And he's coming in to his second year at Auburn in a really interesting spot because he's good enough to be one of your go-to guys. He's good enough to be one of your top targets. But you're also bringing in the Cam Colemans. You're bringing in the Perry Thompsons. You're bringing in the Bryce Canes, those types of guys. And so Caleb Burton's in a weird spot because if he doesn't become one of the go-to guys this year, I think he could possibly leave again because I think he could be that good. But I think Auburn could utilize him even though he is on the smaller side of things when it comes to a receiver. He's still really good, but he's listed at 5'11 and maybe in cleats. 5'11, 173. Compared to Cam Coleman, just for example, who's 6'3 and 188 pounds. And so with your returners of Jay Fair, Camden Brown, Coy Moore, it's time for those guys to do something. You at least have those guys coming back who are experienced and at least have been at Auburn. Guys that have played here, played with these colors, played with these guys, and played in this stadium. And those guys have at least a year with Hugh Freeze. Now, we understand that Hugh Freeze is going to be the play caller and the shot caller on the offense. And that could open things up tremendously. Absolutely. You feel good about those guys, but you obviously were not overly confident in them. Which is why you went and you got some of the biggest receivers in high school football. You got Cam Coleman. You got Perry Thompson. You got the best receivers in the nation to come in, the Bryce Canes out of Mobile. You brought these guys in to help elevate your receiver room. And the expectations are through the roof for them, and rightfully so. Maybe unfairly so, but you know what? They're that good, but I think they're going to be just fine. I think they're going to handle it, and that's not all. So you went and got those guys, and you're thinking, okay, you've still got some of your junior, senior leaders coming back to Auburn. You've got your young guys, the fresh guys, the new meat coming in, and we're going to see what they can do, see if they can bring a little excitement to this receiver room. And then you went out, and you picked up a couple through the transfer portal. And some guys that people are really excited about. Sam Jackson. I think he's up there with the excitement level of what he is going to bring to the receiver room. And also just what he could do from a offensive game planning perspective of the Swiss Army knife type of role that he brings. And so you went out and got a couple of those guys as well. But you're still looking. You're still active in the portal, which tells me a couple of things. It tells me that Hugh Freeze and Auburn are still not comfortable and satisfied 100% with what they want their receiver room to be. And you know what? That's okay, because that doesn't mean it's not good. Doesn't mean it's not competitive. Doesn't mean that they're not going to catch some passes this year. It just means you want as much ammunition as possible. right? You go into a gunfight, you don't want to take just one clip and hope that it works. No, you want to take multiple just to make sure. Same thing here with your wide receivers. It's okay to have more. It's okay to have a luxury of them and have guys to literally choose from. You line them all along the sideline and say, man, I have options. I could pick you, or I could pick you, or hey, what about you? Auburn hasn't been able to do that enough in the past. It's been, here's what we have. I hope it works. It better be good. And it's fallen short. It's fallen flat year after year after year. And so I'm excited that Auburn is still in the portal for receivers. And, you know, if you're a receiver on this team right now, I'm sure some people would say, well, how would that make you feel if you're a receiver on this team and Auburn's still looking? Well, it would tell me I probably need to work a little bit harder. It would tell me that I should probably practice a little bit more and really put some pep in my step. I had to think about how I wanted to say that. But it would tell me that I need to put in a little bit more because my job is not secure. My playing time is not guaranteed here because of the returning guys, because of the other portal additions, because of the freshmen coming in. Auburn's trying to make the receiver room competitive for the first time in a long time. And I say competitive, I mean really competitive. And you've seen what they're doing in recruiting for 25, 26, and beyond. They continue to reach out and be in the running for some of the biggest wide receivers in the country, the biggest names, the most talented receivers in all of high school football. But going after a guy like Keandre Lambert-Smith from Penn State, I'm good with it. Bring me a four-year guy from Power 5 football to step in the room once again. This isn't a Georgia State transfer, nothing against that. This isn't North Texas. This isn't Group of 5 football. This is Power 5, man. This is a guy who played in the second or third best conference in all of college football in the Big Ten. And no, he was not their go-to guy. But he's experienced. You cannot take away, okay, you can't take away 1,700 yards in the Big Ten and 11 touchdowns in 4 years. He's somebody that Penn State trusted. He's somebody that they had confidence in to throw the football to. He was a four-star receiver, and he still is, I guess, if you do a portal ranking and portal ratings and all that mess. He's a good addition. And no, he's not going to be your wide receiver one either. But he could be somebody who starts right away. He could be somebody that starts against Cal, who starts in your first SEC game as the younger guys get kind of more comfortable and get into a rhythm and learn the offense. Think about, for folks that think Perry Thompson is going to walk in and start immediately on the first snap on offense, I think you're mistaken, because he's not even here yet. That's the only downside there. He is not here yet, which means he does not know his teammates. He does not know his coaches. He does not know the offense. He doesn't, most importantly, he doesn't know his quarterbacks. And it's going to take him a little bit to do that. Cam Coleman, Bryce Kane, those guys being here, that's huge. That's really big. And that's why that's become such a growing trend over the last couple of years, and you'll continue to see that. But bringing in somebody like this, like Keandre Lambert-Smith, is a good thing. Competition brings out the best in others. And if it doesn't, then they shouldn't be there anyway. And this guy would make your wide receiver room instantly better. You give Peyton Thorne another weapon. You give him another option to get comfortable with, to figure out, okay, who's good and who's not? Who can we trust? Who can we not? Who can we go to in crunch time when we got to pick up this third down and long? Or we got to go in a two-minute drill? Who can we go to? This guy could be it. And you're just throwing another weapon in there. You're throwing more options in the receiver room. I think his route running is good. They've said a lot about his blocking, which is good. If that's going to be Auburn in the run game, which receivers have always had to block at Auburn more than a lot, because Auburn has historically been a run-first offense. And Penn State's kind of that way, too. Penn State's been that way for a lot of years. So that would translate pretty directly, I would think. And so I think this would be a good addition here. Now, is Auburn in the lead? No, I don't think so. I think Auburn's just now getting started, but I think Auburn's got a shot. I mentioned earlier, other big schools, Alabama, Texas A&M, USC, Washington, Miami, Florida, and Colorado, along with Auburn, have all reached out. They're all interested. So he's obviously got something going for him. He's obviously got something to offer to some of these programs, because some of the biggest ones in the country have reached out to him. And I'm excited, man. I hope it happens. I really do. If it happens, great. If not, oh well. And that's the good thing about the spring portal window, is you're not going in the spring portal to find your day one starter. You're not going to the spring to be like, man, we have got to fill this spot right now. And I don't think Auburn's in that spot. But I'm okay with them going to the portal and finding more receivers, because we've learned in the past, that Auburn, when they bring receivers in, they don't all pan out. They don't all pan out. And so the odds are not really with you right now. And the more guys you have in there, the less chance you have of getting burned. Let's take our first break here in hour number one. We'll get to the phone lines when we come back. We'd love for you to be a part of it as well. 334-321-1390. K-Bag, you'll be first up when we come back here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Let's get to the phone lines here on the Friday edition of On the Line. 334-321-1390. K-Bag, you're first up, man. What's up? How are you?
Good afternoon on a free-for-all Friday. Jacob, how you doing, friend?
I'm good, man. It's Friday. I was told I can't complain about that, and you'll never hear me complain about it being Friday, my friend.
Hey, I hear you, buddy. Hey, I really appreciate the recruiting talk, but, you know, I just want to sit here and say from my elder's perspective, I don't really pay a whole lot of attention to the recruiting rounds, you know, like a lot of folks do these days, and especially the transfer portal. I'm not diving down a rabbit hole on that. But where I believe, you know, the current Auburn football program is, I kind of think that we're in a state that is very similar to the early Coach Tuberville years. And, you know, Coach Tuberville was the king of the 2 and 3 stars, and then once he gets them on the campus, coaches them up for a couple of years and turns them into 4 and 5 stars. And that's where I believe Coach Freeze and the staff is they got the cards that they're dealt. They've had a year's worth of recruiting going into a second recruiting class, and they're trying to figure out where they can put folks and where the needs are. And now, you know, going into year two with Coach Freeze and his staff, it's the how can we take the next step with the kids that we have, the athletes that we have, and how can we get the program moving on a trajectory that is forward and upward? What do you say?
Yeah, no, I think it's exactly where they are, because what they came in with, what they took over, was just, I mean, it was abysmal, right? I mean,
it was a dog turd. And you know what? There's a lot of people that don't want to sit here and say, but I'll be one that says it, that Gus has an immense amount of I don't want to say responsibility, but his hands are all in. The last couple of years of Gus, obviously the Harsin years were atrocious, but it was before Coach Freeze got here, it was a solid 4 years of just crap recruiting.
That's exactly right.
We got the kids that we have, so let's try and get the most of them out of them that we can, and then let's also add some pieces as it plays into the current, what I'll say is the current economic environment of college football. But, you know, there are some kids on here that are in that, I'll say, 35 to 60 range on the scholarship scale that can be real contributors to this ball club and to this university and to this football team. And this is where we have to take the next step. It's with those kids. Let's coach them up. Let's get them in the weight room. And let's figure out how we can take the 3 stars and turn them into 4, 4.5 stars.
And that's what made coaches like Tuberville so good. It was finding those guys and making them really, really good. And that's what Malzahn was trying to do. He would go out and get higher rated, you know, athletes, right? He would go recruit this 4-star athlete and try to make him into receiver or a defensive back.
He never recruited an offensive lineman.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Or defensive lineman.
Yeah, yeah, you're right about that.
That's where we've had our biggest issues is on the line of scrimmage with Malzahn. Mm-hmm. You can't have 275, 280-pound guards trying to block 325-pound defensive linemen. You're going to lose when you're giving up 50 pounds. And that was Gus. And then that you know, parlayed into Malzahn and Hell, we're still dealing with it today with Coach Freeze. So there's a lot of coaching that needs to be done, and I'm not going to sit here and state the obvious about there being a lot of recruiting that needs to be done, but hey, let's just be realistic of where we are. Let's have some realistic expectations going into the summer and into fall and the early camp and the I can't say two-a-days because, hell, they don't practice two-a-days anymore in August. But hey, this is where the coaching is going to take over for Coach Freeze and his staff. I appreciate it, Jacob. Happy Friday.
Thanks, man. Appreciate the call, K-Bag. Great to hear from you, my friend. 334-321-1390, and happy Friday to you as well. And, you know, that's where coaches have to earn their bread. That's where you earn your money is, yes, in recruiting. Yes, you have to have the talent. I want to get to that in just a second. But coming in to, I mean, just take this roster, the current roster as it sits right now on Friday, April 19th of 2024, right? Spring practice is over. The portal's open, yes, but spring practice is over for this team. You're going into now the off-season summer months of the college football calendar before you all get back together and can officially practice again together coming up in August. And this is where a coach has to find, you have to sit down, look at your roster and say, all right, here's what we got. Here's what we got, guys. You sit every coach down and you're like, what do we have and what can we do with it? And this is where, like K-Bag said, this is where coaching takes over. This is where you find the guys on the roster that truly can make a difference for you or have the potential to do that. And you've got to coach them up. Now, it's really tough with, again, the calendar that we're entering because you're about to not be able to really coach. You can't be in contact with them. I mean, you cannot be having practice for the next few months. So it's really hard to do that. But you have to have a plan going into the fall if you're the coaching staff. And it's like, all right, these are the guys that are going to make us better and give us the best chance to win football games. And like K-Mack was saying, it's those things that made the Tommy Tubervilles of the world really, really good. But where I'll disagree with K-Bag just a little bit is while it's okay and it still can work to find those 2 and 3 stars and make them 4 and 5s on occasion, you can't build your program on that anymore. It just doesn't work. And the reason is the talent is too good nowadays. Players are, and this may get some hate, but it is what it is in my opinion. The talent coming out of high school today is better than we've ever seen. It is at the highest point it's ever been. And having those 4 and 5 stars on your team at every position makes a difference. It does. It makes a significant difference. That's why the Alabamas and the Ohio States and the Clemsons and the Michigans and the Georgias, it's why they go after them, folks. That's why they go after them. And that's why they have the highest rated recruiting classes each and every year in the country, and that's why they're winning national championships. I'm not saying you can't find the diamond in the rough every now and then at receiver and make that 3-star a superstar, because Auburn's done that plenty of times, or on the linebacker spot, or a corner, or a safety, or a defensive lineman, or a running back, whatever the case may be. You can still do that. You just can't build your team off of it anymore. Those guys are important. 4 and 5 stars make a difference. And I know they're just ratings, and I know they're just numbers, but talent makes a difference. And in the SEC, that's only getting bigger, only getting tougher. In college football, that's tougher than it's ever been to recruit those guys. You have to go get them. And if you don't, you may be able to survive for a little bit, but you can't compete long term. And so that's where recruiting comes in. You go get them, then you coach them up, and then you start winning some games. We're halfway through hour number one here on a free-for-all Friday edition of On the Line. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. A little schedule talk when we come back here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goetz. On ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We're halfway through hour number one here on the Friday edition of On the Line. Appreciate you spending your final day, final work day of the week here with us on ESPN Radio. And look, we got into a conversation yesterday that I wanted to pick back up and kind of expand on a little bit as well. We were talking yesterday a little bit about Auburn and Alabama's football schedules coming up for 2024. And yes, I know it's April and you're going to say, Jacob, what are you talking about? Well, I'm getting ready for football season because we're in the offseason. And we got to have some exciting things to talk about. And I think this is exciting. And I think you enjoy it. And I hope you do, because it's interesting to look at it between now and what, the end of August, early September, when football begins. Because we'll do this numerous times and as we get closer, but the schedules look different now than they have for a long, long time. I mean, there are new names on the schedule for a lot of different teams, and not just talking about Texas and Oklahoma. We're talking about different formats. We're talking completely different. There are no more divisions, ladies and gentlemen. Remember that. The East and West is no longer a thing in the SEC, which is going to take some time to get used to. Like, I will always, well, maybe not always, but for a long time, I'm going to look at Florida, Tennessee, Georgia. That's the SEC East to me. The SEC West is Auburn, Alabama, LSU. Like, that's just what it's always been. Ole Miss and Mississippi State, like, it's the East and the West. And yes, that is now gone, and that will eventually fade away, but it's going to take a little time to get used to it. But with all of that comes a ton of new looks for SEC football schedules. And it's exciting, man. It really is exciting with Oklahoma and Texas coming in. Look, I don't think that this is it. I don't think the SEC's done. I think more teams will be added to this conference, and I think all of this is going to change. And so this year and probably next year, these 2 to 3 seasons could stand alone on their own. They really could, because this could be the bridge between what the SEC and college football used to look like, and it could be the bridge to what it could become, which is kind of crazy to think about, which is really big brain thinking, which is impressive for me. But you look at this season, okay, and you just start looking through the schedules. We mentioned some for Alabama yesterday. You've got Wisconsin on there in their third game of the year. That one's on the road in Madison. You're home against Georgia if you're the Crimson Tide, which that's good for them. At least they're at home. That'll be the first big home game of the Kalen DeBoer era, because they have Western Kentucky, South Florida before they travel to Wisconsin. And remember, there are 2 bye weeks this year, so Alabama will have a bye week before the Dogs come to town. So that'll be a really good atmosphere. It'll be a night game there in Tuscaloosa. They're home for South Carolina. They're at Tennessee. That'll be the second real tough road test for this Alabama team. Then they're at LSU, home for at Oklahoma, and then home for Auburn. Like, man, just talking in April, not fully knowing what that Alabama team has and what they're going to look like, and just so many question marks with a brand new coach, a brand new staff, and the, I guess the standards are not different, but you get what I'm saying there. Man, there's a few losses on that schedule. There are. At Oklahoma, I don't know. We don't know what Oklahoma's going to be. At LSU, I'll say that's a loss. At Tennessee, not looking great. I think they lose the game at home against Georgia. I really do. That doesn't count Auburn coming to town. That doesn't count going to Wisconsin. That doesn't count hosting South Carolina. Oh, sorry, they do go on the road to Vanderbilt. So there's a couple of losses on that schedule, in my opinion, for Alabama. And we've talked about this, and we'll continue to talk about this. How will the Bama fans handle it? How will they feel? Will they be understanding? Will they be reasonable in knowing that it's not going to be Nick Saban on the sidelines? Will they completely accept the fact that they're probably not going undefeated this year, that they're probably not going to win the SEC this year? I don't know. They say they will, but will they? What happens if they go on and lose on the road to Wisconsin? And then what happens when they come home and lose to Georgia and they start the season 2-2? What happens then? Man, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be crazy. Will they call for the head of Kalen DeBoer on a stake out in the front yard? No, I'm just kidding. They probably won't do that. But that would be uncharted waters for this Alabama team, this Alabama program, to start 2-2. That'd be rough, man. So their schedule, all in all, though, is not easy, but it's not overly difficult. Going to Wisconsin's not fun. You get your biggest game of the year outside of all. You get your two biggest games of the year at home. You get Georgia and Auburn at home. You got to go to Tennessee and LSU, sure. And you do have to go to Oklahoma. So their road trips aren't easy, but their two biggest games of the year outside of LSU are at home in Bryant-Denny Stadium. Then you start, and we're just going to go alphabetically here. You look, and we're not going to go deep dive in all of these, but you look at Arkansas, and man, their schedule's weird. It's weird. That's the best word that I can come up with, because they start with a cupcake game to get it going against Arkansas Pine Bluff. Then they take a random road game to a non-conference team at Oklahoma State. I love it. I love that. I think that's going to be super exciting. That's old school right there. Arkansas and Oklahoma State. Then they come home for UAB. They travel here to the Plains to take on Auburn. They'll play Texas A&M in that neutral site thing, which I don't know why they still do that. They should just make it home and home, but whatever. Then they're home for Tennessee, home for LSU, at Mississippi State, home versus Ole Miss. They get Texas at home this year on November 16th, old school. Then they have Louisiana Tech, and they're at Missouri. All things considered, that's a favorable schedule for the Razorbacks. Their road games are what? At Oklahoma State, at Auburn. That's it. I mean, they have at Mississippi State and at Missouri. Okay. You're telling me they only play four road games this year because one of them is neutral site? Good for them. They have some huge home games, too. They have Tennessee at home, LSU at home, Ole Miss at home, Texas at home. Good for Arkansas. That's a favorable schedule. Now, will the team be worth a flip? I don't know. We're going to find out. But that's a good schedule for them, so shout out to them. We mentioned the Auburn schedule yesterday, and this is something we'll continue to talk about as we go through the offseason. But this is the most favorable Auburn schedule that I have maybe ever seen in my lifetime. And this still includes trips to Georgia and Alabama. Yeah, that's... What do you got, intern Alan? You're jumping in on this. What you got?
Well, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, but I think the one thing that is noticeable, like that 2022 schedule, you have your first five games at home, and I think it's gonna be just a tad warm.
It's rough, man.
But I will say is that something that kind of parallels that 2022 schedule with this one is you have a major flip game as that last game of the home stretch of the home stretch with Oklahoma. Last time it was LSU, and that played a big factor in kind of determining where this team was going to go. And
that's a good point.
Because in the first half of that LSU game, you thought, okay, this Auburn team could do something with the if we had the right pieces in order and get the right amount of momentum. And what they do, 17-0 lead down the drain.
And then
it was just a tough scene to say the least. It was a tough scene the rest of the way in 2022. So I think that first big game is going to be. I mean, they're all big games. Don't get me wrong, but the Oklahoma game I think is going to definitely help steer some momentum potentially, especially with that first road game being at Georgia.
No, that's a really good point. And, you know, and I said this yesterday, and I will continue to pump this and scream it from the mountaintops before August 31st and through those first couple of weeks of the season. Auburn should be 4-0. I mean, Alabama, and that's not a crazy, I'm not claiming that as a wild hot take. Like, that's just the expectation here. Auburn plays Alabama A&M, Cal, New Mexico, and Arkansas the first four games of the season in Turn Allen. They should be 4-0 easily.
Those are the definition of four very gettable games.
Yes, so, absolutely.
And now I will ask you this, Jacob. Is there, if you do somehow slip up in those first four, is there alarm bells going off, or is it just, I mean, I agree.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I think so, especially with how you flirted around with Cal last year. Yes, it was on the road and all the weird situations.
At four in the morning.
You should have lost that game anyway. I mean, you should have lost that game, and somehow you came out with a win because Cal is just that bad of a team and program right now. They just couldn't win. The only one you could maybe not completely stress about is if you lose the Arkansas game. But it's got to be close, and Arkansas has got to do something this year for that to be the case. Because if you lose that game against Arkansas, and they go off to be a 5-7 team or only get 5 or 6 wins, maybe don't even make a bowl game, then that's a big problem. And then if you lose that Arkansas game, you then, I put it on the Oklahoma game as one you have to have before you go and play Georgia. Because if you want to start talking about winning the SEC, or at least being in the top two and being in the conversation of this expanded playoff this year, you've got to win these games. And having numerous losses, I think two is about the lowest you can go in terms of real postseason consideration. And so that's why I say 4-0 is important in this first five games, but 4-1 has got to happen to me.
And one thing that you just talked about with no more divisions, I was just about to say, after you have that home stretch, you play four SEC East teams in a row. That is no longer the case.
Nope.
So, but I do find that interesting. I don't think it's going to be weird seeing those four teams consecutively on the schedule now for.
And it's about time, though.
I mean, and the one thing I just can't get over, and it's going to take some getting used to, because I mean, me and you, Jacob, are pretty close to the same age, that early 20s. We've always known the Mississippi schools and LSU are always going to be on that schedule. That's all we know when it comes to Auburn scheduling, and neither one of those three are on there. It's going to be weird not seeing and not going to see Hugh Freeze go back to Oxford, Mississippi. That one's going to have to wait.
Yeah, it's going to have to wait.
So there's a big storyline out the window, and I mean, Auburn and Ole Miss have had some good games ever since Lane Kiffin got to Oxford.
Yeah, they have, and you know, you look at Ole Miss not being on the schedule first time in over 30 years. I think Mississippi State, it's like 70-something years that they haven't been on the schedule, and LSU not being on the schedule either. That's something for us younger guys that love the Auburn-LSU rivalry.
Yeah, and the one thing that was always constant with Auburn-LSU, some weird stuff was going to happen, whether you like it or not, no matter how good either team was going to be.
There's always some voodoo around that game.
It's not Iron Bowl level, but you knew you were going to see something weird.
Mm-hmm. So. And they're always competitive games, too. And so Auburn loses out on those. But, no, I think the first four games, if you lose any of those first four, I think you're in trouble. And then, yeah, I'm with you, Alan. I think the Oklahoma game could be that one where it's like, okay, it is like that LSU game a few years ago where if you win this game, you're 5-0 heading to Athens. You're 5-0, you get on the bus, and you're feeling good about yourself wearing your Stormtrooper whites, and you walk into Athens, Georgia. You should feel good about yourself, win or lose, in that game. But if you're 4-1, you're still feeling okay. If you're 3-2, you've got some big problems.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Then also how that pertains to the rest of the post-Georgia schedule, because Missouri and Kentucky seem to be Missouri for sure, but both of those teams seem to be trending up a little bit, but those historically seem like games that Auburn should win, even though they're on the road. I mean, it's just the little things. I mean, that momentum that you can take out of that Oklahoma game, there's going to be no shame if you lose by 2 or 3 touchdowns to Georgia in Athens with where Georgia is right now. Not too many people are going to be in the national media are not going to be too shocked by that. And then you play Missouri and Kentucky. It's those are games that you would historically think Auburn should win. So I think those are going to be – I think that Oklahoma game is going to be very important.
And the good thing is, too, you get the bye game after the Georgia week. Right. So then you get to – recover regardless. You get to recover after a six-game stretch, and then you get to prepare for, yeah, road trips to Como and Lexington. Then you welcome, hopefully you take care of those, and you welcome Vanderbilt into Jordan-Hare. Then you get a bye week again to prepare for what is a manageable backstretch of the season. I like the double bye. Now, I may not like it during the season because I like to watch Auburn football, but I like the double bye, and it breaks up the schedule a lot. And look, some would argue, Alan, some would argue that the first five game or first six games of the season is the hardest stretch of this entire schedule. You have the first six, the middle three, and the back three. And yes, it is more games, but take the first three out. Take Alabama, Cal, and New Mexico out. Those first set of three, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Georgia, that could is arguably tougher than any of the other stretch because you're at Georgia. Now, the back end is ULM, Texas A&M, and then at Alabama. But, I mean, if you go even 2-1 in that first set of three, you're off to a hot start and you can do some really special things this season.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's just, once again, it's a new era of SEC football. It's going to take a lot of getting used to, and I'm pumped. It's going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is, and folks, we're just coming off the Masters. Here is a college football tradition unlike any other. We are beginning that point post spring game to where for the next 2 or 3 months, Jacob, we get to talk ourselves
yes.
into how our team is going to hoist that trophy.
That's
in,
right.
In January, and we're going to figure out every loophole we can to get there.
We have a term for that in sports talk radio. It's called talking season. That's what we're in right now.
So good.
And I
so
love good. It. I love it. I'll say this before we get to break, because I want to start talking some more teams as well. We'll carry this into hour number two, and phone lines are open. We'd love to get your thoughts on all this. If Auburn goes 5-0 in that first five games, and then they go on the road and lose to Georgia. All right, you're 5-1. You hit your bye week. Everybody's like, oh, Auburn, here comes Auburn. They're 5-0 on the road at Georgia, and then they lose. You could potentially be forgotten about a little bit. And Auburn could take that bye week, and they could just go and do their thing. They're not going to get a whole lot of coverage. They're not going to get a whole lot of media attention. Nobody cares that Auburn's on the road at Missouri. Nobody cares that Auburn's on the road at Kentucky. Nobody cares that Auburn's hosting Vanderbilt. Right, but you could just start to win those games and pick them off one by one. You could beat ULM because nobody outside of here is going to care about that game either. And then all of a sudden, here's a one-loss Auburn team coming down the stretch in the end of November. You host Texas A&M, and then you take a trip to Tuscaloosa for the first time with the new head coach on the sideline. Can you feel it, Auburn fans? Can you feel the building and the momentum and the positivity and the excitement that the season could bring? God, we got so long before football season, but not that much. It's only a few months. 334-321-1390. That's the number to get you through to us. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one, continue into hour number two here on the Friday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Friday edition of On the Line. And as we've been talking about the schedules, I want to carry this into the second hour and look at some more SEC schedules because, as you found out, I'm long-winded. And we got through almost three schedules today. And so I want to keep talking about some of those and kind of breaking them down and what they could be and what that could mean for some of these SEC teams. And coming up in hour number two, there are some major rules changes in college football that we need to talk about. Two of them that got approved today. And so we will talk about those coming up in the second hour as well. And the phone lines will open back up in hour number two as well. But I want to wrap up the Auburn schedule conversation because it really is manageable, and that's why I'm sort of getting all fired up about it, because it's a doable schedule. Like, it's a winnable schedule. And when's the last time you could say that about Auburn? It's not. Look, I'm so glad that Auburn's not going to carry this title anymore, because I'm tired of them having it. Auburn is not playing the hardest schedule in the country this season. They're not even playing a top five toughest schedule in the country this season. And you know what I say to that? Good. Finally. Auburn's tired of it. Arkansas's probably tired of it too. Ole Miss is up there sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes. But Auburn's tired of it, man. And they're proud to get rid of that title, strip that plaque off the wall and throw it out the window and give it to somebody else, man. Because this is not a tough schedule. Yes, you do go to Athens. Yes, you do go to Alabama. But that's it. Those are your two tough road games. Now, you still have to take care of business at Missouri. You still have to take care of business at Kentucky. But Auburn plays four road games this year. That's it. You have to take advantage of that. You have to be able to take advantage. You have five straight home games. And yes, while it's going to be a rough time near the end of it for fans and for players and for coaches and for workers and administrators and SIDs and everybody involved, you have to win those games. And then when you go to Athens, when you go to Missouri and Kentucky, you try to win. And then you come home for easier games. You've got a big game at the end of the year against Texas A&M. And then you finish it off on the road and you can spoil Kalen DeBoer's first Iron Bowl at home. Tell me that doesn't get you fired up in April. That's what I'm talking about. Hour number one in the books, man. We had a great time in this first hour. Phone lines are back open. Call in. You can start off hour number two with us. We'll talk some more SEC schedules plus rules changes around college football that impact the way the game is played and how many commercials are taken. We'll talk about all that and more coming up in hour number two. Don't you dare turn that radio dial.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on the Free For All Friday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goertz with you on ESPN 106.7. If you missed any of the first hour, you can go and catch up with the podcast. You can find that one of two ways. First of all, go to our station website at ESPNAU.com. You can find it there right after the show, or you can go to and just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast, and you can find it on there as well. We talked we talked schedules in the first hour, and yeah, intern Allen, you gotta remind me what we talked about, man. I'm losing my mind over here. We talked schedules in the first hour. We talked wide receivers for Auburn.
That's right. Yeah. We're talking transfer portal, wide receiver, why Auburn's going after receivers in the portal.
Boom. See, there we go. That's why you're here. That's why you are show producer / intern Allen. So, yes, we did talk about all those things. We talked about Auburn going after the Penn State transfer receiver, the current receiver room, and why it's a good idea for this team to continue to go after transfer portal guys. And then, yes, got into some more scheduling conversation as we continue that here in hour number two. Plus, we have some college football news we need to talk about. NBA playoffs are getting underway. All that sort of stuff is going on. And so before we get there, though, it's a busy weekend and upcoming few weeks here on ESPN Radio on ESPN 106.7 because there are so many events going on around the NBA playoffs, around Major League Baseball, and if you tune in here and you're a loyal listener to the station, you know we carry as many live events as we possibly can. Here's the updates going on. Are you ready for this? Here's what we've got going on ESPN Radio here. Tomorrow, we've got baseball. We got the Tampa Bay Rays and the New York Yankees tomorrow afternoon at 11:30 a.m. Then, we've got the Lakers and the Nuggets game one of their playoff series in the NBA playoffs. On Sunday, we've got my Boston Celtics playing, they don't know yet because the next playing game is tonight in the NBA in the East, but Celtics in the game one, we'll have that on Sunday afternoon. And then if you miss this announcement, your Atlanta Braves will be playing right here on ESPN 106.7 against the Texas Rangers for Sunday Night Baseball. So just keep it tuned in right here all weekend long. No reason to change it. Have it programmed as number one in your car when you get in. That's the best way to do it. So all sorts of great things coming up here on ESPN 106.7 over the next few days. As we get into scheduling conversation a little bit more, we had gotten through, just going alphabetical order, Alabama, Arkansas, and Auburn, and it brings us to a really interesting one. And I feel like a broken record when talking about this team over the last few seasons in terms of their schedule, because I don't know what Florida did. I don't know what they did to anger the college football gods, to anger the SEC, to really get in their bad side. But Florida's schedule in turn, Alan, is horrible. I mean, it's terrible, Alan. Their schedule is brutal.
I think they're now starting to pay the price for those gator skin jerseys they wore six or seven years ago.
That's a good call.
And and for anybody, if anybody likes those jerseys or thought that they were fire, please call in. I would love to have a conversation.
Oh, man. Alan would love to go in on you for a second. But this Florida schedule, I mean, it's not easy, man. It's really not. And what's crazy is it's not as hard as it's been in the past, I don't think. They open up with Miami, which is awesome. I love them opening against the Hurricanes, against Miami. Then they host Samford, and then they host Texas A&M. And so those first three games are all at home, right? Those are not neutral site games. Those are all home games in the swamp. Is that correct?
The last time Miami and Florida played, it was in Orlando. I'm not sure if this one is neutral site as well. And if and I think games like that, the interstate games should be played on the campuses anyway.
I agree. Yeah. And so you've got those first three, and I'm pulling up the actual Florida schedule. I was just looking on ESPN's website. But no, it says the Miami game is in Gainesville. So that's going to be in the swamp there at Ben Hill Griff Stadium. So excited for that. That'll be really cool to see Miami. Hey, they'll actually play in a sold out stadium. That's exciting.
And there you go. And as far as Florida goes, a decent start to, like you said, brutal, brutal, brutal from about game four on.
Yeah. Yeah, so Miami, Samford, A&M are the first three games. And look, if Florida doesn't play well, they could be 1-2 in those games. Miami could beat them, and A&M could beat them. And then you travel to Stark Vegas and take on Mississippi State, which I don't think anybody is expecting a whole lot out of that camp this year, but you're still going to the Cowbell City, so you just never know there before you get into a bye week.
Yeah, and it's like when Auburn went to Stark Bowl, and the first year Joe Moorhead was there.
Yeah.
Number eight in the country, I think. I think Auburn was ranked number eight in the country at that point. And yeah, that one kind of told the story for the rest of the season. But no, with Jeff Lebby, I know we'll get to Mississippi State in a minute, but I think Jeff Lebby, just gotta give him some time. Weird little road game kind of sandwiched into a bunch of tough opponents, I think, is something to look out for.
Yeah, then you play UCF at home, which I don't know why Florida would schedule that. You're just asking for, I mean, you're asking for a disaster by welcoming Central Florida into Gainesville, because that's no longer a Group of Five team, ladies and gentlemen. That's a Big 12 program. It's the Fighting Gus Malzahns coming to Gainesville, Florida, and they would love nothing more than to beat the Gators in the swamp.
I love it, though. I think the interstate games are what makes, because you have Miami, UCF now, a Power 5, 4 conference, whatever we're going to call them. And then you have Florida State, I believe, at the end of the year. So all these, I kind of wish that all four of those teams like found a way to all play each other throughout the year.
Well,
that's something that the fans would love to see.
Yeah, well, if there's a state that can do it, it's Florida. With Miami, Florida, Florida State, UCF, South Florida even. I mean, there's a ton of programs in that state that are big time that you can throw into this mix. And so they've got UCF in there. Then they're at Tennessee, they're home for Kentucky, they get their next bye game, and then it's going to be downhill from there for Billy Napier and the Gators. You've got Georgia, the neutral site game in Jacksonville. They get a date in Austin, Texas, taking on the Longhorns. How cool is that going to be to watch Florida make a trip to the Longhorn State and take on Texas on November 9th? They come home for LSU, home for Ole Miss, and their season finale, as they always do. This time, they'll be in Tallahassee taking on the Seminoles of Florida State. That's an 0-5 slate right there for Florida.
Yeah, and if we had a camera on our studio, my face was just buried inside of my hands, because it's just that it's a point where I'm constantly scrolling up and down the schedule, and you're like, where are the wins?
Samford, I'll give them Mississippi State. I'll give them UCF at home. Oh, gosh. Maybe give them Kentucky at home.
Maybe.
And maybe Ole Miss at home. I mean,
they got history on their side with Kentucky.
That's true.
They've got that.
Kentucky broke the curse, but Florida does have the record.
Big picture, that it's on their side.
Oh, dude, I can't find a bowl game for this Florida team. I can't do it. I can't find a bowl game. Like, I can't find 6 wins for them on this schedule.
Can you find 1 win at Tennessee, Kentucky at home, Georgia, Texas, LSU, Ole Miss? We said maybe Kentucky.
Maybe Kentucky. I said maybe Ole Miss, too.
You think they could get Ole Miss?
Depends. I don't know Ole Miss is going to be good.
It's at home, though.
Okay. I'll say this. It depends on if that Florida team has completely given up, if that fan base has given up, if Billy Napier has accepted the fact. Heck, if Billy Napier is even the coach at that point, that's a legitimate conversation, man.
There you go.
November 23rd, if the wheels have completely fallen off this train and it's derailed into the cliff, I mean, he could be fired before the Ole Miss Rebels even show up.
That would be a very interesting storyline to follow if they don't start 2-1.
I mean, you've got to get wins early if you're Billy Napier in that squad. So we'll see what happens with the Florida Gators. We'll continue rolling through some of these. Georgia has an interesting schedule. They've got a fun schedule. I'm excited for this. They open up with Clemson in Atlanta, which you know our feelings about the neutral site games. It is what it is. It'll be a home game for the Dogs once again.
I think neutral sites are okay if you have 1 or 2, but not 5 or 6.
Right. So that's fair. They'll open up against Clemson. Then they got Tennessee Tech, which those poor souls. Then they go at Kentucky September 14th. You know what? I've tried to hype this up before. I've tried to hype up the Georgia-Kentucky game.
They're not going to do it.
No, they're not. They're not going to do it. Kentucky is not. They're not ready.
No matter
for
where
it.
You play it.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, Kentucky is not Georgia. They cannot hang with the Dogs and Kirby Smart. They can't do it. I don't care that it's at Kroger Field in Lexington. Georgia wins this game by 3 touchdowns.
Kroger Field. That's all I have to say.
It is still named Kroger Field, isn't it?
That's right.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
No, it's just one of the more interesting
stadium names
in the SEC and in college football as a whole.
Yeah. Well, but, I'm not going to hype it up anymore, man. Georgia will win that game. We're not even going to stress about that one.
Yeah, and we're going to get to some more of these games, but just a little spoiler alert here. I talked about it yesterday. SEC kind of making a statement to the big dogs right here.
No pun intended
for Georgia, but now I will say that the SEC is definitely making a statement here, telling Alabama and Georgia, hey, we got this new era of SEC football. We're going to put you to the test right away.
And Georgia, and this is not just from an Auburn perspective, because Auburn fans have been saying this for 20 years, but just look at Georgia's schedules over the last 15, 20 years. They've been laughable. I mean, and that speaks more to what the SEC East has been rather than Georgia's schedule, because you can only play the teams in your division. Well, that's no longer a thing. So you now have 1, 2, 3, 4. You have 4 former SEC West teams on your schedule compared to the 1 that they would play every single year in Auburn.
And that's the thing with the SEC East, was that 2020 you had that really good Florida team. The last couple of years you've had some improving Tennessee teams. So those teams have definitely helped their case over the last few years. But in terms of the big picture over the last 10 or so years in the SEC East, it is just, I mean, it's a joke.
Yeah, so Georgia opening up with Clemson, Tennessee Tech at Kentucky. Then that game on September 28th that everybody's ready for, the night game in Tuscaloosa. They've already announced it. It's a 7:30 kick inside of Tuscaloosa, inside of Bryant Denny Stadium. So they will have a bye week to prep for that, which is going to be really interesting. But how about this turnaround? You play at Alabama, and regardless of that outcome, you then come back home to Athens, and here comes the Deep South's oldest rivalry. Here comes Hugh Freeze and the Auburn Tigers, who very well could be 5-0, 4-1 or 5-0 rolling into that game. You just got beat up by Alabama. You're probably going to win that game, but it's still going to be difficult. And then you have to take on Auburn at home, Mississippi State at home, before Georgia gets a rematch against Texas. They'll take on, or I guess, not necessarily, but Georgia will be at Texas October 19th before they get another bye. And in the back half, they have five games on the back half after their second bye. Florida neutral site at Ole Miss, and then three straight home games, Tennessee, UMass, and Georgia Tech.
Sarkisian and Kirby is going to be that'll be a fun one.
It is going to be a fun one.
I'm looking forward to that one as well as Ole Miss as well for Georgia.
Yeah, because, at Ole Miss.
Because last year that was big. Game day was there, and Ole Miss was definitely, they're starting to do all the right things with the portal, winning the games you're supposed to win, and then the talent gap and just the whole landscape of everything. There's a clear difference between those two programs and their roster, and that got exposed last year. And I think, and Lane Kiffin has not shied away from it, about saying, "Hey, we have got to get dudes." We talked about it in the break, we got to get some guys that can hang with these guys, because I mean, they got totally exposed last year.
Yeah, they did.
It was close for the first quarter, and then the number one team in the country at the time showed everybody why. And Ole Miss, I think, was top 10 going into that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it was a top 10 showdown, yeah.
And definitely showed a big gap there between those two. So I think Lane Kiffin's going to have this one scheduled, or this one circled on the schedule, and it'll definitely be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think Georgia will still be good. I think they'll have a good record, but their schedule is definitely tougher than it's been in the past. Going to jump around a little bit here. I want to talk LSU's schedule. LSU has a very interesting schedule, and if you have not noticed what Brian Kelly and this LSU program has been doing in recruiting and coaching hires, just go read up on this a little bit, because I don't know how LSU quietly does anything, being one of the biggest brands in college football, but here we are. Everybody's just letting them do what they want to do, and they've just begun picking people apart. They play USC to open. They also play at South Carolina. They play UCLA in the fourth game of the year because, sure. Then they play South Alabama. They get a bye. They then host Ole Miss, which will be fun. They go to Arkansas, to A&M, get another bye. And then the back half of LSU's schedule, home for Alabama, at Florida, which will be fun on November 16th, and then Vanderbilt and Oklahoma to end the year for LSU. I know it's a weird schedule and you've got some bigger names on there, but that's manageable, in my opinion, for this LSU team. If you can start 5-0, which I think is doable, you play USC out in Las Vegas. That's a neutral site game on, I believe that's Labor Day, that September 1st, which is what LSU's been doing. They played Florida State, and they've done that a couple of times. But you beat USC, Nichols, South Carolina, UCLA, South Alabama. LSU's rolling before they play Ole Miss, Arkansas, A&M. Games I think are winnable. Then you have Alabama at home. Kevin DeBoer's first year, first time in the swamp. Going to be really, or not in the swamp, in Baton Rouge. So that'll be fun. Then you play at Florida in the swamp and Vanderbilt, Oklahoma. So watch out for LSU. That's a fun schedule too that could be manageable, could be almost attackable, or could be something where LSU could trip up a time or two. We'll take our first break here in hour number two. We'll get to the phone lines. They're wide open. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Terry, you'll be first up when we come back here on the Friday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Let's get to the phone lines once again here on the Friday edition of On the Line, 334-321-1390. Terry, happy Friday, man. What's up?
Hey, Brad, Jake, how's it going, man?
Going good, man. What's on your mind?
Jake, you got to ask the most important question.
Okay.
If Alabama has three losses next year, is K. Ivey going to activate the National Guard to surround Kellen DeBoer's house?
It's very possible, and I said even sooner than that. What happens if they start 2-2, Terry? If they lose to Wisconsin and Georgia back to back,
then they have to guard the bridges and his house. So I just like I said, you got to give Nick Saban credit, you know. But you know how fans are. Remember, fan is short for fanatic.
It is, yeah.
So
it is.
Keep that in mind. I heard K-Bagger talking about I didn't get the full gist of his call, but talking about the linemen, Hugh Freeze has addressed the offensive line more in less than 2 years than Malzahn did at all. And I don't know what Brian Harsin addressed. It wasn't the football team. I know that.
Mm. Well, I agree that Hugh Freeze has definitely he's definitely put a focus on that. And, I mean, it's one of the things that he talked about that he noticed immediately when he got here, when just looking at the roster and kind of evaluating it, was he was like, man, we got to go get some guys up front. I mean, we got to go get some SEC-level guys to play offensive line for sure, but defensive line. And Auburn's had some historically good defensive linemen, but they got to go get some to fill the line. But then, yeah, I mean, he understood that. You got to go get some guys to play offensive line that can actually protect open holes for the running backs and allow the offense to flow the way it's supposed to. And so I think he's done a good job, but he would tell you more than anybody, the job's not done.
Yeah, well, great offensive lines down through history have made average players look really good.
Yeah, no, you're right about that.
Argument, what if Barry Sanders could have ran behind the Dallas Cowboy offensive line?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I think he would have made 2,000 yards look normal. Emmitt Smith was a great player, but he also had a great offensive line in front of him.
Mm-hmm. And I think you could say that about a couple of Auburn running backs in the past, too, sure, that were really good, but believe it or not, had good offensive lines in Auburn and made them even better. And I think it's really, really hurt some good Auburn running backs in this near past, I guess, in the last, I don't know, 10 years, 7 years that have been really good, but just didn't have the support up front that they needed to reach their full potential.
Kerryon Johnson?
Yeah, I mean, and look what.
David, how good could he have been?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the reason he got hurt. Well, some of it, and then Auburn just worked him to death, so he was unable to. His body just couldn't hold up any longer.
And look, I made no secret of the fact I've been a Hugh Freeze guy from the get go. Jacob, you know that.
Yep.
But the guy has addressed the offensive line stronger than any coach we've had in a while.
Mm-hmm. I mean, since Tuberville.
Yeah. So I just don't understand. I mean, Gus Malzahn was too busy recruiting quarterbacks and running backs, and I always said about Gus was he got so obsessed with his system, he didn't adjust the player to the system. He wanted the player to adjust his system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he wanted the flashy players.
He didn't recruit linemen at all.
Well, it's not a sexy position. There's no doubt about that. And I mean, you got to have them, though. They're essential. That's what you tell me all the time, right, Terry? The game starts up front. It's won and lost up front, right?
Yeah, well, it may not be a sexy position, but it's where the game is won and lost, as you said.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Appreciate it, Jack. Have a good weekend.
Thanks so much, Terry. You too, man. I appreciate you calling in on a Friday. 334-321-1390. And I think Terry's right. I mean, look at what Hugh Freeze has done on the offensive line and recruiting. And he's getting some men up front on defense as well. But, I mean, for the first time last year, we felt okay going into a season. And it didn't work out as much as we thought it would and how we planned on it. But look at the offensive line for this season. I mean, is it fair to say that we feel pretty good about the offensive line this year? I mean, to where it's like, it's not going to be it's not the one position that we're going into every single game this year saying, well, if the offensive line can hold, maybe the quarterback can do well, or if the offensive line can make a hole, maybe we'll get some ground yards. Like, I don't think that's one of the major concerns. It's definitely not at the bottom of the list for positions that Auburn is struggling in. I mean, you're bringing back guys like Jeremiah Wright, like Connor Liu, who are going to be up front doing what they need to do. You have these Tate Johnsons of the world, the Dylan Wades. Like, you're bringing back guys that are going to help you on the offensive line, are going to make you a good offensive line. And that's strong, man. That's really strong. And look, Hugh Freeze knows his offense is elite when it's running like it should. And he understands that you got to have the boys up front to make that possible. So I'm not worried about that. I think it will be a solid unit this year. I'm not going to go out and say it's going to be elite. It could be, I guess. I don't think it will be. But I don't think it's going to be the detrimental part of the team like it's been in the past. Like where it's been, man, imagine if the quarterback wasn't running for his life the entire time. Imagine if Bo Nix had time to set his feet and throw the ball. That's a wild thought. What happens if the running backs could actually, I don't know, take a few steps before they get hit by a defender when they get the football in their arms? That's a crazy idea. What if the wide receivers actually had time to get open? Now, they got to run the right routes and they got to have the timing down, but that's a separate conversation. They're not even getting time to do that. I don't think that's a problem right now. And while this isn't going to be a top three offensive line in the SEC, I could make the argument for it being top five, top six. It's not going to be bottom three like it's been for a long time. And I think it may surprise some folks this year. I really do. And that's exciting because of what you have around it, right? Because of what you bring with the potential of Peyton Thorne at your quarterback. And I know that that is a controversial topic. Some of you are excited about him and some of you aren't, because some of you are just flat out scared, and rightfully so. I do not say that in a bad way by any means. You're scared that Peyton Thorne doesn't work out, and then the question becomes, now what? Now what do we do, right? You're wondering, if he doesn't work out, where do you go? But the potential of Peyton Thorne is really high, and if he's got the offensive line to do what he needs to do, he's got the running back to do what he needs to do, Auburn's going to have one of the best running back rooms in the entire SEC. And we already talked earlier today about what the wide receiver room could be. The potential of the receivers is unbelievable. You've got some of the best young guys in the game in your receiver room, either right now or going to be in the next couple of months. Everybody will be here by the fall. Plus your returnees, plus your transfer portal guys, and you're still not done on that. You're going after the Penn State kid. So all of that being said, it still starts up front. It still starts with your offensive line. And if they allow you to operate the offense and orchestrate the offense and run it the way it's supposed to be ran, you've got potential to score some points and to win some games. And Auburn hasn't had that in a long time. So you bring up a good point, Terry, and I appreciate you calling in about it. All right, coming up here on the show, we'll take a little different approach, a little different conversation. It's been approved as of today, a couple of rules changes around college football that include late game management and how coaches talk to players. We'll talk about all that and more coming up here on the Friday edition of On the Line after this.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Friday edition of On the Line. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man Jacob Goetz with you on ESPN 106.7. And something we need to talk about today was two things that were approved and changes for college football. And they go into effect immediately for this upcoming college football season for 2024. And I want to get your thoughts on this as we go for the rest of the show. 334-321-1390. Two changes were made and adopted today for college football. The first one is not as crazy, not as big of a deal in my opinion. The rule is now allows for helmet communication inside of the players' helmets. So here's what it says, according to On3. One player for each team could be on the field and wearing a helmet with the communication technology at a time. The helmets with the communications tech in them will be marked by a green dot sticker on the back of the helmet, exactly how the NFL manages the identification. And in a final similar situation to the NFL, the communication from sideline to player will be cut off at 15 seconds left on the play clock or when the ball is snapped, whichever comes first. So you can't be a quarterback and you can't be dropping back in your two-step and your coach can't say, he's open on the right. Can't do that. That's not how that's going to work. And up to that 15 seconds, your coaches can tell you, hey, we're going to change this up. We're going to make this play. Hey, watch out for this, blah, 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 right? Whatever the case may be in that certain situation. Then at 15 seconds, or when the play is snapped, that communication will be cut off. For this, look, the NFL's been doing it for a while. I don't have a problem with it, and 9 times out of 10, it's going to be the quarterback that has this in their helmet anyway. I mean, you could put it in a running back, I guess, or a center maybe, but I think it'll probably end up being the quarterback more times than not. I'm fine with it. I don't really see a whole lot of downside to this. Like I said, the NFL's been doing it for a while, and it's only going to make your quarterback and your offensive play calling a little bit better. On that side of it. So I don't know. I don't see a real big downside to it. Do you, Alan? Do you see anything negative that, and if our listeners have something too, they can give us a call, 334-321-1390. Is there really a negative side to all of this for somebody on the field, a player, to have helmet communication with somebody on the sidelines?
I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think just some of the college football traditionalists, they're seeing where the game is going.
Which is fair.
Which is totally fair. I mean, with NIL, with something we're about to talk about in just a second. You've had the clock changes. I believe this past year was when they went to the, I think it's, was it the clock would keep moving even after first downs, mm-hmm. outside of 2 minutes?
Yep.
So you're already starting to see some things that are being brought down from the professional game. I don't think it's that huge of a thing to get outraged about. I don't think there is too much outrage around it, but it's just going to be something different. Definitely something that the college coaches that haven't been in the NFL will probably have to get used to, especially with those college players, because that communication, to my knowledge, is not legal at the high school level, and it's never been legal in the college level. So I think it'll be different for the players as well, and it's a different way. It's definitely going to take some getting used to, for sure.
Yeah, it's an adjustment for the players and for the coaches, having that ability to be, I can talk to you right now. You know what I'm saying? I can calm you down. And it can be used for that too. That's something interesting that I don't think will be talked about enough. It can be, that was a bad throw. Okay, that's fine. You know what I mean? Hey, that's fine. Get it out. It's okay. Not your fault. You can use it almost as a pep talk type of thing, instead of having to call them over to the sideline or call a timeout. I mean, you can make adjustments on the fly rather than using the hand signals and using posters. They'll still use those types of things, but you can directly talk to your quarterback in his ear.
I was about to say, one of the cool things, though, about college football was the fact that when you have those sideline angles that show where the quarterback is looking at the sideline,
yeah,
you have one coach wearing red. Now, let's just use Auburn, for example.
Yeah.
Navy top, white bottom, white helmet. You got a coach over there in purple. You got a coach over there in yellow.
Looking like highlighters over there.
No doubt about it. And then they throw up a sign that has this logo, some random baseball team logo.
And it'll have SpongeBob SquarePants on it.
And the fans look at it and they're like, my goodness, what could that mean? But I guess we're about to find out.
I guess so. And you know, some people are getting up in arms about this because of the Michigan thing, where you had Connor Stallions, who was going and stealing signs and doing that type of thing. And so maybe this will kind of cut back on that as well, because you don't have to do as much of that now that you can communicate with your quarterback or whoever you want to on the football field. So that was one of the rules that was approved today. The other one is much bigger, and it's something that college football fans, I don't know how they're going to react to this. I haven't seen a whole lot of reaction to it yet, but I'm sure as we go on, and I'm sure after the first weekend of college football, it'll be a big topic that is discussed. Not only did this get approved for there to be communication in helmets of one player on the field at a time, college football has now adopted a 2-minute warning in college football. Yes, a 2-minute warning has now been adopted. It will be implemented and will be added to college football moving forward. And pretty much every reaction that I have seen has been, great, another chance for a 4-minute television commercial. And you know what this screams to me? You know what this screams to me? Is that right there. Play it again. That's what it is. It's money, man. That's what this is about. It's about the money. Who cares about a 2-minute warning in the NFL? Like, does anybody really, besides getting up and going to the bathroom and getting another drink before the rest of the game is played, do you really look forward to the 2-minute warning? Does it really benefit anybody? It's just an extra timeout. But we got to get in our commercials, Alan. And that's what it's all about, is that right there. And is it that big of a deal? I don't know. Probably not. But fans are going to be fired up. They already are. And it just slows down the progression of the game once again.
I think it's just another example of that one or two rules one of the two rule changes in the off season of college football that you're getting over, or you're talking about spring ball for your team, you're talking about the Masters with golf, you're talking about the NBA playoffs, MLB's getting underway, and then you have that random tweet come across your phone that says these rule changes are being proposed and likely, and they usually go ahead and pass through. I think it's another case of the cliche, who asked for this?
That's, as I read, the original tweet that I saw was from On3 on X, and the first couple of comments are, helmet communication is great, but literally no one was asking for a two-minute warning. And that's kind of what you were just saying right there. I mean, did anybody really want a two-minute warning in college football? I don't think so.
The first thing that comes to mind when these rule changes started happening, well, one of them, the obvious one, was probably targeting, was one of the first big ones that came into the game of college football and caused a big uproar in its first year. And now it's kind of just becoming part of the norm. And then you had 2018, folks. We're gonna go back to the LSU-Texas A&M football game that went seven overtimes.
Which I think is fantastic, by the way.
Was awesome. You had Joe Burrow in his first year at LSU.
But the players were tired, Alan. They could have gotten hurt.
I know that. That was the cliche.
That was their reasoning.
All of a sudden, and that's the thing. You change something that's been put into effect, not because of things that have happened over time, because of one isolated incident, and I bet I'm gonna be bold here.
That's what this show's about.
Depending on how bold this is, I guess history will tell. There cannot be too many college football games that have gone to that many overtimes.
There
can't be more than 5 to 10 games.
Right. I mean, if that. I mean, it really is. It is what it is.
So you make a rule change for something that historically does not happen.
Exactly. And, you know, with some of these rules changes, and again, we'd love to hear from you on this. The consensus that I'm seeing on these two rules are helmet communication, massive win, huge upgrade, much needed. People are calling it the Harbaugh effect, which I think is really funny. Hashtag thank you, Jim Harbaugh was trending at one point, so that's even funnier. And I think helmet communication has been long overdue for college football. But, I mean, I have not seen one person that is excited about this two-minute warning. And somebody made a good point on X, so we're about to get to the phone lines. Somebody said this was one of the few things that they have yet to change that they've now changed that separated the NFL from college football, where in college, yeah, the clock stopped temporarily after a first down. That's no longer a thing outside of 2 minutes. You now have a two-minute warning, which I guess kind of separates that and kind of marks that now, I guess, if you want to look at it that way. But I don't know. We're getting closer and closer to the college game and the NFL becoming the same exact one. And I know that they're both football, duh, but they've had major differences for so long, and those major differences just aren't really there anymore, and they're continuing to go away. And like you said earlier, Alan, this is a rule change that the NCAA implements that just not a single soul asked for. 334-321-1390, let's get to the phone lines. You're on the line. Who am I speaking with?
This is Lynn.
Okay, Lynn, what's up, man?
Hey, a couple of questions.
Okay.
I want to go back. I want to return to college basketball for maybe one question.
Go for it.
And then go into college football. I've heard your shows for the last couple of days, and one question that I keep wanting to come back to, and I addressed it on another microphone yesterday, was that a wake-up call, right? Because based upon the way I heard you tell it, if we don't do, we're under pressure to do something here. So is it really more of a wake-up call than, because based upon hearing you, you were fiery the couple of shows that I've heard about all of this. So is it a pressure-laden? Is it a wake-up call? Is it something? What is it?
For what exactly? I may have missed what you said.
A college basketball and people returning and
Yeah, no, I think it is pressure for sure, and I don't think it was pressure driven for guys. Are you talking like Jani Broome and those guys coming back,
returning? Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I got the feeling that they had the memo early. This is a wake up call here.
I think so, yeah. And I think the pressure's on Auburn, absolutely. I think the pressure is 100% on Bruce Pearl and Auburn because, as I said the other day, you don't bring back Jani Broome, you don't bring back Dylan Cardwell, Denver Jones, and you don't go get J.P. Pegues if you don't plan on winning and competing for an SEC championship, whether it be regular season or NCAA or SEC tournament, and you don't plan on making a run in the NCAA tournament. Because while Jani Broome may have not gotten drafted this season and this cycle, he was going to do something professionally, and you convinced him. Yes, there was money involved, but you convinced him to come back for another year. So you're absolutely right, Lynn. The pressure's on Auburn right now.
Okay, and now returning back to college football.
Uh-huh.
I think that this 2-minute warning thing is going to allow people to buy time athletically, because like in college basketball, I'm afraid that if this rule wasn't initiated the way I think it is true and in place, I'm worried that there'll be a bunch of Hank Gathers and Reggie Lewis's in football dying on the field. I think it's having people to buy time athletically who need it. I don't want to see a Reggie Lewis or Hank Gathers dying on the football field.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just an extra break is kind of what you're saying, right? It's just an extra stoppage of play.
And if I'm a running back in particular, I'm elated. I'm elated.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Because I'm going to coach saying, okay, I'm about to be Hank Gathers here. You better get me out of there for a while.
Yeah,
I'm not going to be dying on the field. Mm-hmm. We already had that with Gathers and Lewis.
Yeah,
we're not doing that here in this sport.
Right. I kind of compare that to Lynn. I kind of compare it to like the media timeouts in college basketball. Like each team's got a set number of timeouts, but you have those guaranteed under 16, under 8, under 4 timeouts that the players and the coaches rely on each and every game. So I'm sure that's what the 2-minute warning will become in college football.
Well, if it's initiated like I hope it is true and in place, it keep the players alive, because I'm not going, if I watch a live broadcast, which I probably will, and if I see people dying on the court, or in this case on the field, there's going to be an upset smo in that wherever I'm watching the game at, there's going to be an upset smo, and that's going to be me.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that, man. I totally get it. Lynn, appreciate the call, man. Great to hear from you on this Friday, and appreciate you coming in with a couple of interesting points there, one basketball, one football related, 334-321-1390. And you know what? I can get behind that. That's fine. I mean, sure, from a health and player safety perspective, the 2-minute warning is fine. I mean, you get, yeah, it's just a built-in timeout. That's all it is. I mean, it's a built-in timeout where, from a health safety concern, everybody can come off the field and you get that last gasp of air, you get that last sip of water, and then from a game planning standpoint, Alan, you get, okay, here's our last chance. Whether you've got a timeout or not, that's the part that I don't like, is if you've already used your timeouts,
right,
you can now plan for this to be an extra one.
A built-in timeout.
Basically, yeah. Now, you know, as the years go on with this 2-minute warning, it'll just become a part of the game plan, same way it is in the NFL, but that's one thing that's been special to college, is now you do have that extra last chance to game plan before you go out for your last hurrah.
And I imagine the reason, and I was talking about it before we had Lynn on, was the overtime changes The idea of putting, so an SEC football game for anyone's body for 60 minutes of football is grueling.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine playing 7 overtimes worth of football they're going to be wore out. That does raise some health concerns
for sure
for the players. And so I'm sure that was the primary reason why I believe that that rule was changed. And it also took away something that was special to college football, because NFL, you have one overtime.
And it's so dumb.
And yeah, that we could save that for another show. But and that's another thing is we saw it in the Iron Bowl a couple years ago. You have two regular overtimes. I initially thought if you were going to change overtime, make them start going for two right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. If you want to try to get it over quicker, a 2-point shootout, you're going to put the ball on the 2-yard line and the coaches get the 2-point shootout, and it's just right. Who has the best 2-point plays.
Well, I think both sides in that Iron Bowl would agree, Auburn and Alabama fans, like that game should not have come down to 2-point conversions. Like that game was too good, and it's a miracle that Auburn was in it. But
no doubt,
that game shouldn't have come down to 2-point conversions. Let's just be honest. And and it's those changes that you're just like, what? Why? That's the question you ask, is why. But then I remind you two things. One, I remind you who this is all from. It's from the NCAA. And I'll also remind you what it's all about. And I'll leave it at that. We'll take our final break here and come back and wrap it up here on the Friday edition of On the Line. Stay tuned.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Winding down here on the Friday edition of On the Line. Man, I appreciate you all being here with me all show long today, all week long. It's been a lot of fun, a little bit of a different week. Uncle T-Bone will be back on Friday, so just remember that. He will be back he'll be back on Monday. And you can tell it's Friday for me, man. It's I gotta go. I gotta get out of here. He will be back on Monday, Uncle T-Bone will. We'll recap everything that happens over the weekend, maybe some portal news for football, basketball. You just never know what's gonna happen in the next few days. So we'll have that for you on Monday. And we'll also have Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network. He'll join us recapping everything going on around Auburn Athletics, including Auburn baseball, which begins tonight against Mississippi State. Those are on the road. So Auburn and Butch Thompson over in Stark Vegas, they will be taking on Mississippi State tonight, tomorrow, and on Sunday. Pulling up the official start times. I had them earlier, but get those pulled back up for you in just a second. You can catch all of those on Wings 94.3, wingsfm.com, and the Wings 94.3 app, and now our new Radio Alabama app, so be sure that you download that, and you can catch all the action for Auburn baseball, where they got to find some wins somehow, man. I know it feels like we've been saying that for the past month or so, but Auburn baseball has got to find a way to will themselves to victory. I don't care if you got to score 25 runs to do it. Just get some W's, get the series win regardless. And man, if you could sweep Mississippi State, that'd be phenomenal, but that's a pretty tall task. First pitch tonight, 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock tomorrow, 1 o'clock on Sunday, and the broadcast will also start 15 minutes before, so 5:45 tonight over on Wings 94.3 here locally in Auburn and Opelika. If you missed any of the show today, you can go and catch it with the podcast. You can find it at ESPNAU.com or just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. It's been a lot of fun. We've talked wide receivers today. We've talked a lot of scheduling for SEC football. Didn't get really even halfway through it, but we'll continue doing that as the offseason goes. And then we were talking a little bit of the rules changes in college football with the helmet communication now for a player on the field, and the 2-minute warning in college football is a thing, and it'll be implemented this fall, so we'll see how that goes as well. Appreciate you all being with us, whether it's been one segment, 1 hour, both hours, the whole show, doesn't matter, man. I appreciate you being here. We say it all the time. Nobody's working harder than we are, and nobody's having more fun than we are, and I promise you that is the case. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back on Monday, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.